Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Sherry K.B., and I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from Northern California. Today is Wednesday, January the 23rd, 2019, and this is our 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're at page XXXI. In the doctor's opinion, starting with the third paragraph, beginning with, when I need a mental uplift. And we'll be reading through four paragraphs, concluding with William D. Silkworth, M.D. So we're going to be finishing the chapter today. So we'll be commenting on all four paragraphs. Today's readers are Nancy T. for the 12 steps, Athena B. for the 12 traditions, and the readers of our text are Liz T., Cindy D., and Penny L.C. Our newcomer greeter today is Melanie C. The share ID for yesterday's Tuesday, January 22nd, 2019, our 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 12,447. So that's 12447. And the share ID for this morning's Wednesday, January 23rd, 2019, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 12,452. So again, that's 12,452. OA Preemblem. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who through shared experience, strength, and hope are recovering compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for our members. We're self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And now I will ask Nancy T. to read our OA 12 steps. Nancy? Star one to unmute.
Hi, I'm right here. The suggested steps in this program of recovery are as follows. We admit it, we were powerless over food, alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Number two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Number three, made a decision to our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him, to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Number four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Number five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Number six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Number seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Number eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Number nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Number 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Number 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power that to carry that out. And number 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. And now we'll have Athena B. read our 12 traditions of OA. Athena?
Good morning. Athena B., recovered compulsive overeater. These are our traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And thank you for letting me do service.
And thank you, Athena B., for your service this morning. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And so today we resume our study of the Big Book on page XXXI in the doctor's opinion, starting with the third paragraph beginning with, when I need a mental uplift, reading through 4 paragraphs and concluding with the end of the chapter where it says William D. Silkworth, M.D. So comments will be on 4 paragraphs. Just went blank. So will Liz T. Please read for us this morning, please.
Sure. Good morning. My name is Liz T., a recovered compulsive overeater in Minnesota. Thanks, everyone, for being here. When I need a mental uplift, I often think of another case brought in by a physician prominent in New York. The patient had made his own diagnosis, and deciding his situation hopeless, had hidden in a deserted barn determined to die. He was rescued by a searching party and in desperate condition brought to me. Following his physical rehabilitation, he had a talk with me in which he frankly stated he thought the treatment a waste of effort, unless I could assure him, which no one ever had, that in the future he would have the willpower to resist the impulse to drink. His alcoholic problem was so complex and his depression so great that he felt his only hope would be through what we then called moral psychology, and we doubted if even that would have any effect. However, he did become sold on the ideas contained in this book. He has not had a drink for a great many years. I see him now and then, and he is as fine a specimen of manhood as one could wish to meet. I earnestly advise every alcoholic to read this book through, and though perhaps he came to scoff, he may remain to pray. William D. Silkworth, M.D. All right, again, my name is Liz T. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Minnesota. Thank you, God, for the gift of entire abstinence and the 12 steps. This is a powerful area of the Big Book for me. my notes on the side of my the side column of my book, it says this is regarding Fitz Mayo, and part of his story can be found on page 208, and he's also mentioned page 55, and on page 208, it's our southern friend in the back of the book. And I guess the part that's jumping out at me today is that, you know, being hidden in a deserted barn, determined to die. And I think I remember reading this the first time through and identifying out with that, thinking, well, I've never done that. You know, my disease wanted me to identify out. But the longer I'm in program and the more times I read this, especially now with sponsees, new things jump out at me. And I realize as my acceptance and conceding to my innermost self, who I am as a real compulsive overeater, that the way I was living my life was very much like hiding in a deserted barn. My world had become really small. I didn't talk to a lot of people. I avoided people. I was isolating. I was eating in private, in secret. I was going through drive-thrus, multiple drive-thrus, so, you know, they wouldn't catch on how much I was eating. Then I would go home and try to have a sensible dinner with my family, all while raging at them. Not being very pleasant, just life was difficult. My problems were becoming astonishingly difficult to solve and piling up on me. And so I was very much like the walking dead. I was the shell of a human being. I was just like a chameleon trying to figure out how you wanted me to be so you wouldn't reject me or criticize me so I could be a step ahead, ahead of any criticism or rejection, so that very much the actor trying to be the director, and just failing miserably in my life in so many different ways. The other area that was jumping out at me is the depression so great that we felt his only hope would be through what we called moral psychology. And that's that spiritual awakening that I need in order to cope in this world, to function. My depression was very much similar, or, you know, I was diagnosed with clinical depression and generalized anxiety disorder, which resembles for me that spiritual malady, the untreated alcoholism. I didn't have a design for living that really works like I have today at my fingertips with all of you walking this path, and I'm no longer alone. I'm no longer hiding. I'm still an introvert to some extent, but a little by little I'm coming out of my shell a little bit, and a lot of that is thanks to you guys and your support and my higher power bringing me into alignment of how he would have me be. With that, I will pass.
Thank you, Liz T. Thank you for getting us started. So again, we're reading in The Doctor's Opinion on page XXXI, beginning with When I Need a Mental Uplift, reading through four paragraphs and concluding at the end of the chapter where it says William D. Silkworth, M.D. Comments will be on, four paragraphs. Who would like to share?
Any
I would,
Ginger
if that's
Lee.
Possible.
Julie E.B.
Okay, I heard Ginger C. I
Nancy.
Heard
Julie G.
I'm sorry, Julie E.B. Who is next, please?
Penny L.
Beverly R.
Penny L.
And I heard a something R.
Rose.
Beverly R.
I'm sorry, something R.
Beverly R.
Beverly R. Okay.
Elaine J.
Okay, two more.
Elaine J.
Elaine J.
Stephanie N.
And I heard a Roz. Is that G or R?
G.
Roz G. Okay.
Thank
we've
you.
Got, we've got that. Sorry. So we have Ginger C, Julie E. B., Penny L. C., Beverly R., Elaine G., and Roz G. And Ginger, will you please get us started? Ginger, can you hear me?
Oh, sorry about that, Sherry. I thought I was unmuted. Thanks so much for your service this morning. This is Ginger C., recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado. And what a mental uplift. He's in a deserted barn. He's determined to die. Life is too heavy. It's too hard. He cannot see going on another step. And, you know, that's the reality. When the pain of living gets worse than the fear of dying, we get suicide. And what a miracle for us that are out of the food in this recovered state, and it's only because of the grace of God saving a wretch like me. And it's a searching party, but to me it's this higher power working for this gentleman, because he, again, could not see going on another step. It was too much to bear. And God sent that searching party. God sent it for all of us. And I remember the pain and the depths, the bite, and where it took me to. And I knew I was in big, big trouble. I'd never fallen off. I was like that ski jump like Bill talked about. And it finally caught my attention. Thank you, God. Because I always said, well, you know what? It's at least not alcohol. So it's okay. And if it's an option, it's going to be the only option. And that relapse will happen over and over. But again, that pain set in a way that I had never felt pain from food before. And I was afraid. And then I said that most desperate prayer, God, help me. Because I knew I was in trouble. I didn't go into a barn, but I was going into a car. And that car was never going to leave that garage. I wanted to die. I couldn't stand life. It was too much. The food was killing me. But you know, this loving grace of God, this God that's down deep within all of us, we just have to seek, and we need to seek daily, because I am powerless a day at a time. So I love the ending. Earnestly remain to pray. I always say ASAP, always stop and pray. Because without God, I have nothing. I have no power. I have no defense against that bite that wants to get back into my mouth. But if I'm close and connected, and I'm keeping my eye on the ball, I'm safe and I'm protected. And I have this ego that works in such miraculous, crazy ways to just try to disconnect and separate and isolate me. Because isn't that where I'm going to be eating? Isn't that what the ism is all about? I separate myself. I'm alone with these crazy thoughts. And I believe the greatest lie of all, that the food is my friend and it's okay to have that bite, and that I need it to get through this thing called life. So again, thank God for this program. Thank God for the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank God we're all doing it together a day at a time, always into action. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Ginger C. And Julie E.B., you're up, followed by Penny L.C. Julie?
Hi, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered in relief one day at a time. I got a huge boost from the earlier meeting, hearing something about the stuff we can leave in the barn. There's so much I can leave in the barn from yesterday. I had a difficult interaction at work yesterday, and my boss said, well, you have an edge when you need to be right, and I'm working an entire program around self-will and letting God help me see my character defects, so I'm willing to let them go and let God take them. And I was still caught by surprise, thinking I need to be perfect and going back into that self-loathing that goes with perfectionism. But that's not it. I have a chance today to live a different way. I have a chance today to know another chunk about myself, and to live with love and tolerance as my code. So once again, I felt like scoffing. I felt like dismissing that. I felt on my high horse. But the thing about scoffing, if you came to scoff and this isn't for you, it's so lonely, you know. It's as lonely as that barn. It's as lonely as my room was. Whenever I'm scoffing, I'm putting a distance between myself and help, myself and ideas, myself and other people. And when I'm praying, whether I'm praying to the same God of your understanding or to a God of none of our understandings, or to a higher power like the mountains or the ocean, something bigger than me, I'm praying with thousands and millions that have gone before us, and we're together. So I hope that those who come to scoff and are sitting there alone will, in the prison of their own mind and lives, will remain to pray, because you're in it with us. And the simplest prayer in the Big Book, God, do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. And that's what I ask for myself and for all of you today. Thanks for letting me share. I pass.
And thank you, Julie B. And Penny L.C., you're up next, followed by Beverly R. Penny?
Good morning, Sherry. Thank you for your service, and good morning to everyone on the line. This is Penny Elsie, a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from the state of Washington. And I do remember the hopelessness. I do remember the isolation. It may not have been a barn. It was probably just simply my home with, you know, figuratively the drapes drawn and not wanting to be in touch with anyone, totally out of, you know, out into that isolation and depression. And yet coming to the rooms of 12-step recovery, I did see some hope. And when someone in recovery cracked open this book with me and walked me through it, then I had the assurance that there might be a way. And yes, I knew I never would have enough willpower, but I also learned that that would never be the answer. It was never meant to be the answer, because I am powerless and I need a power greater than myself. And that's what this book has helped me to find. And that in lies the gift of the moral psychology, that spiritual awakening, connecting with a power I choose to call God, and being able to have a relationship with that power that could bring me through this devastating disease and walk me toward freedom. And I was sold on these ideas in this book and have continued to be. And I'm so grateful that I can continue to read these pages the same way I can continue to pray and stay connected to my higher power each day. And when I am in that communication with God, that is where today I gain my sense of ease and comfort that food never provided truly.
I think that's time.
Thank you, I'll pass.
I'm sorry, Penny, that was not me.
Well, that's quite all right. I'm fine. Go
okay.
ahead, Sherry.
Well, thank you. I'm not sure who that was. So Beverly R., you're up next, followed by Elaine G. Thank you. Beverly? Beverly, star 1.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead, Beverly.
Hello. From puberty and long before I even dreamt that I had an eating disorder and long before my eating disorder really took off with a vengeance, I can identify rage as one of my outstanding characteristics, and a lot of quarrels with a lot of people and a lot of vengeful attitudes and sulking and just sometimes just lying in my bed with my head to the wall, just sulking. And another thing I identified was later on was, and beginning even from teenage as well, was depression, a very, very, very deep depression. And my father was the main butt of my quarrels during teenage. I would deliberately go out of my way to pick on him and quarrel with him, and of course he gave it back with all he could. Yes, so that's what I identify as my most consuming character defect. And I just think that I am so glad that I found OA, and it's been a very long journey, and I haven't finished working the steps yet. I haven't started sponsoring yet, but thank God for the miracle of OA, and that's all I have to say. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Beverly. And Elaine G., you're up next, followed by Roz G. Elaine?
Hi, I'm Elaine J. from Newport Beach, California. Thank you. It's a great, powerful meeting. When they talk about depression and anxiety with the gentleman who is Fitz, our Southern friend, I felt that way. I thought if you had my head, you'd eat too. And I came into the program in 1974. And for the first 20 years of my program, I would intermittently abstain and then break my abstinence and abstain. And I actually abstained my way, dieting with God, up to obesity. And what happened is that many years ago, I was struck abstinent, and I had been promised that I would no longer yearn for my disease if I worked the steps. I was promised that I could be 100% abstinent the way I was 100% sober. And that miracle has transpired for me. That was 24 years ago now, and I have never eaten compulsively ever since. However, I have dealt with life, and I know that this fellow really had some problems after he got sober. And that's okay, because I have worked these steps tenaciously. When I finally became abstinent 100% and was on my road to recovery, I was faced with the terror and the truths of why I had been eating all those years. And it was really ugly, and it was frightening. And my anxiety and depression escalated. But because I had taken those first three steps, I knew that no matter what, I would abstain. I was going to be okay, that God was going to take care of me, even though I was in incredible pain. And because I was finally struck abstinent, and I don't take credit for that, I am free today, and I continue to work these steps, these principles, challenge my old damaged spiritual beliefs with step four, but specifically with step 10. I'm absolutely free. But I was in my own isolated barn, even in OA. And I felt too damaged, and I'm not damaged today. I'm absolutely free of my disease. And I recoil from it as if from a hot flame. Anyway, thank you very much. God bless you all. Great reading.
And thank you, Elaine J. And before we hear from Roz G., I just want to remind everybody where we're at. We're on page XXXI, the doctor's opinion. In the third paragraph, beginning with when I need a mental uplift, reading through four paragraphs, which takes us to the end of the chapter where it says William B. Silkworth, M.D. So I'll be taking names after Roz shares. So go ahead, Roz.
Good morning. Thank you, Sherry KB, for adding me in your lineup and for everybody's service this morning. Well, what I would like to focus on this morning is the paragraph on moral psychology. And I thought that my compulsive eating problem was a moral problem because I come from a, you know, pretty high religious background. I would seek out people in church who were thin, or I used to watch religious TV, and there was this doctor that wrote a book on nutrition and all the scripture that went along with how we treat our bodies, you know, that we present them as a living sacrifice and stuff in the Ecclesiastes, and even some stuff in the book of Leviticus. And I even got a book on Bible health. And I'm not putting those down, but my disease of compulsive overeating goes beyond the church, goes beyond those frothy emotional appeals. Now, I'm not putting those down. I believe those are you know, God's word, but I needed the big book and Bill's story of identification of being hopeless. And trust me, I tried all the moral stuff, workshops, prayer, fasting, you know, looking up all those scriptures. But those were almost, they were the same things as diets. I did not understand that I had an allergy. There's the difference between having an allergy to something and having a moral problem. I had plenty of moral problems in my past with the way that I treated men and the cheating that I did in my marriage. Now, those are moral issues. But when it came to having an allergy to chocolate or an allergy to sugar or an allergy to macaroni and cheese, that's not moral. That's physical. And that turns into a psychological, you know, phenomenon of craving when I eat those things. There's a big difference, and I'm so grateful that I have taken those differences very seriously on a daily basis. And the moral stuff comes later when I do the step work and I don't behave those ways anymore. Thank you very much, and I pass.
And thank you, Roz G. And just want to remind everybody where we're at. We're at XXXI in the doctor's opinion, starting with the third paragraph. Could somebody please mute? We're hearing some water running. Thank you. Starting with the third paragraph, when I need a mental uplift, reading through four paragraphs, ending the chapter, concluding with William D. Silkworth, M.D. And who would like to share, please?
Marissa E.
I heard Marissa E.
Kathy Jo P.
Bruce E.
Lisa J.R.
Kathy Jo P.
John K.
And I heard Bruce E. And I heard John K. And who was before John K?
Stephanie N.
Stephanie N.
Lisa J.R.
I heard, yeah, okay, Lisa J.R. And then I'll take, was that Stephanie N.? Stephanie, was that Stephanie?
Yes,
N?
Stephanie.
Okay.
It's N. Uh-huh. Thanks.
So I have my lineup here. Marissa C., Kathy Jo P., Bruce E., John K., Lisa J. R., and Stephanie N. And Marissa, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Sherry. Good morning, my fellows. This is Marissa E. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater outside Los Angeles. I wanted to hone in on he did become sold on the ideas contained in this book. So, you know, Miss Dictionary, I looked up sold, and there's a couple definitions. Persuade someone of the merits of, convince, talk someone into, or win someone over. And there's a second definition of cause someone to become enthusiastic about. And it was about a year ago, I had a girlfriend in my inner group, and she went to the birthday party and heard about recovered and this recoveredness and was like, what's that? And, you know, she told me about vision. And I started listening, and I really did scoff, right? Like, oh, you know, you have to put down your alcoholic ingredients and you have to call someone every day. And I was like, ugh, ugh. Like, I've been in OA for 10 years and I'm doing fine, right? But yeah, right, over time I kept listening because there was something, there was some hope, there was some strength, there was some power that I hadn't heard before. And right, it took what it took, but I have become fold. I have become persuaded of the merits of this book, right? And you guys have caused me to become enthusiastic about this book. You know, it talks about in one of the stories in the back of the book how Bill W., he says, he's like, you know, I have been saved and I just want to tell everyone about it. And, you know, I don't tell everyone about it, but when I do see newcomers, when I do talk to fellows, you know, I share my experience, strength, and hope, and how reading this book through you know, that has saved me, that has graced me, and I have been given that entire abstinence. I have the willingness to call and connect and to just follow the prescription as outlined in this book. And so I'm sold. And yeah, I'm just hoping that everyone listening gets sold too on the ideas. And that, with that, I pass. Thank you.
And thank you, Marissa E. And Kathy Jo P., you're up, followed by Bruce E. Kathy Jo?
Good morning. This is Kathy Jo P., a recovered compulsive overeater in Minneapolis. And I love how today Liz started us off with the analogy of hiding in the barn. And for me, some people were at home with their curtains closed, eating to oblivion. And I was out in public at 303 pounds, eating to oblivion in front of everyone, pretending like you didn't notice, pretending like I didn't care. I've referred to myself as the emperor with no clothes on, walking around, eating, pretending to be happy and jolly, pretending that it didn't matter to me. But where I was hiding was what was inside. I was so mortified and so alone with everyone. In the big, huge circle of life, I was alone and dying inside. Every once in a while, a flashlight rescue would come to me, and it would be either someone living in the spirit, showing the hope and possibilities of this program right in front of me, and it would shine in on me, and I would want to run away even deeper inside and pretend like, again, that I didn't want this and I didn't care. Or it would be someone that would say something to me, like my cousin did at a wedding 8 years ago. Kathy Jo, you're killing yourself eating those breakfast potatoes. And maybe it seemed like those moments didn't matter, but all of those moments were God nudging in, trying again and again and again and again to let me know there is another way. And the people that carried that light were letting me know there is a way out. And thank God I had enough one day. And I contacted someone that I knew could take me through the big book. And I said the most powerful words ever that have ever come out of my mouth. And I said, you take people through the big book, don't you? Will you take me? Will you take me? And today, if you are even thinking about asking and putting away all of the things, the foods, the behaviors, to get through that isolation and through that despair, we're here for you. And I am so glad that I have found a way out. And every day I contact another fellow and I basically say, will you take me? Will you take me and I'll pass?
Thank you, Kathy Jo P. And Bruce E., you're up, followed by John K. Bruce?
Well, thank you. Thanks, everybody on the line. Thank you, Sherry. Let's see. Doctors thinking about here about a mental uplift. And, yeah, I do that occasionally. I mean, I need to do that more often, just kind of a gratitude list, you know, go back and think about here's the successes. You know, here's a guy that was totally at the bottom, and here's a success story. And it lifts this doctor's spirits up to think about this guy, and the situation was hopeless. Well, let's see now. Hopeless. What does hopelessness look like for me? Well, I've been there, and I've been in that barn, too, a lot of times. So hopelessness for me is, number one, I can't do it myself, so I've tried doing it myself. That doesn't work. I can't stop eating, and I don't have any help. And I either have a higher power or I don't have a higher power, but that's not working for me. I don't have the power. I haven't appropriated the power. So that's hopeless. And man, have I been there. 25 years of chronic slipping was, I'd say, was a pretty good dose of hopelessness. And so here's a guy, then he says about willpower. I could assure him that no one ever had, that in the future he would have the willpower. Well, for me, see, I didn't have the willpower either, and I still don't have the willpower. It's I understand that it's not a problem of food, it's a problem of power, but not willpower, not my power, but appropriating God's power coming through and funneling through me and taking care of this food problem and being able to help other people. So complex, and the problem was so complex, and his depression so great he felt only hope would be a moral psychology. Well, I've tried a lot of moral psychology. I mean, I've been to that church too that somebody mentioned earlier. You know, maybe I get it in church. Maybe I ought to be able to get it in church. God's there. I can get it in church. And man, I had to come into these rooms. And the hope came when I got on this line. And I started hearing people sharing with enthusiasm in their voices and talking about being recovered, which I am now, Bruce, food addict in Florida, but recovered, thank by the grace of God. Thank you, God. However, he became sold on the ideas contained in this book. He has not had a drink for a great many years. Sold on the ideas means he bought into this book. He bought into this program, which I've done. I bought into this. I know it works. It's worked for me. I know it works for others. So that's it for me. And thank you very much, and I pass.
And thank you, Brucey. And John Kay, you're up, followed by Lisa J.R. John?
Good morning. This is John Kiernan, recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. You know, when I read this story, I think about how the great majority of the people that got into AA in those days were really low bottom. And here's a perfect example of a really low bottom guy in a barn. And thank God, as AA grew bigger and got well more and more well known, the bottom in average for people came up, which was great. I mean, I came into AA and got sober when I was 26. And a lot of people I know, and now, heck, I'm seeing them 15, you know. And it's great. Because the bottom doesn't have to be as hard. But the thing is, it still is something that whacks you upside the head, especially every once in a while. But with food, I think it is so much harder. A number of years ago, I wrote an article for this website that has all these different 12-step disciplines written about. And the article was called "Food is Food is Deadlier Than Drink." And I actually got a bunch of AA people annoyed at me, but I did list why I felt in being a person in recovery in both programs why. And the main one I always talk about is the method of pain which each disease delivers. Alcohol, drugs, they slam you face down into the pavement. And every once in a while, there'll be this glimmer of what the heck am I doing with my life? But the trouble is, food is a chronic, dull pain. And if you're a smart person, you get used to it. You move the goalposts. You constantly accept that which was previously unacceptable. And the main reason, I believe, is that food delivers the pain in such a way is that you know you should be doing something about it, but you're not always willing to go to any lengths because the pain isn't always hard enough. When I hear people say, I'm praying for willingness, I'm going, it's really overrated. It's about pain. Pain drives you to willingness. And that's why this disease requires more. You know, I was at the birthday party and met a lot of my fellows, both in and out of vision. And one of the things I see with the long-timers is a lot of them are 100-pounders and have had to lose a lot of weight like myself. Others didn't have to lose, but were so desperate they were near suicide. And to me, what I try and tell people is maybe you're not either of those categories. All you have to do is work the program as if you were, as if it was a matter of life and death, because whether you know it or not, it is. Because I can tell you, I've buried a lot of people in this program. I've buried two sponsees. I've buried a lot of other people, different ways, heart attacks, strokes, but by far the most was suicide. And because people just got tired of fighting this. And the thing is, I will wrap up. If you can just see yourself as desperate as the guy in that barn, you can recover. Thanks for letting me share.
And thank you, John. Lisa J.R. and Stephanie N., we have 5 minutes. If you'll take 2.5 minutes each, that would be great. Lisa?
Thank you so much for your service. Lisa J.R. here. Oh, boy, you know, I didn't wake up determined to die when I was born. I had all the hope in the world. But this disease took me on a wild ride. I wasn't prepared for. You know, I went from being an Epicurean to slumming at White Castle and Taco Bell. I went from having table manners to eating like a junkyard dog. I went from having some vanity to not even caring if I brush my teeth. I was determined to die. I was settled. I was resolved on, decided on that, yes, this is how it's going to be. I'm going to die. So my home became my deserted barn. I could work. I could get out and white knuckle it and put on a good front and pretend things were okay and go home and just want to die. And, you know, I tried everything. I tried everything. I prayed. I really relate to what people said about prayer and about God. You know, doesn't matter how close our relationship is if we're not willing to allow our higher power to take us where he needs to take us to get better. And it's the willingness. It's the just determination to just let go. And I will shorten it up with that. Thanks for letting me share.
Well, thank you, Lisa. And so that means, Stephanie N., you do have 3 minutes.
Okay, great. This is Stephanie N., recovered in Kansas. And the sentence that spoke to me most was where it says, he's frankly stated he thought the treatment a waste of effort unless I could assure him, which no one ever had, that in the future, he would have the willpower to resist the impulse to drink. And so he wanted a promise, which reminded me of all of the promises in this book. But the promises come with the condition that we stay in fit spiritual condition. But then on the next page, it tells us that he became sold on the ideas in this book, which are the principles of the program. And if I live by the principles, chances are I will stay in fit spiritual condition. And just like he didn't have to drink again, I won't have to eat again. And so the promises will come true, but I have to follow the directions in the book and stay in fit spiritual condition. And with that, I pass. And thank you for your service, Sherry.
Thank you, Stephanie. Well, we have about a 2 minute. Would anybody like to take it, please? If not, we can end early, but if somebody would like to have a burning desire or anything.
Kathleen O.
Kathy C.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did someone else?
Kathleen?
Hi,
this
good
is
morning.
Kathy C. Go ahead.
You know what? Go ahead, Kathy C. Go ahead. All right, it's Kathleen O. I'm going to take it. I'll take it really fast because we're wasting all this time figuring out who's going to speak. However, he did become sold on the ideas contained in this book. And, you know, he was willing to follow all the directions outlined in this book. And if we do that, this does work. You know, we help other people by giving them our experience and then letting them have their own experience. And Fitz was, I think, the third person that, after Dr. Bob, that Bill W. had some success in passing this on to. And we just never know when it's going to work. So it is all about passing it on, and we become useful, happy, joyous, and free. We're no longer hopeless. I came in hopeless, and there is just so much hope in this program. And with that, I pass. Thanks, Sherry.
Thank you, Kathleen O. And thank you, everybody, for sharing today. And I wanted to thank Team Wednesday for their service. Nancy T., my dog is barking, I don't know why, the 12 Steps, and Athena B for the 12 traditions. Liz T read our text, and Cindy D is going to read page 164, and Penny L C for backup waiting in our wings. Our newcomer greener is Melanie C, and our announcements today will be by Leslie M. And just want to remind everybody to please, newcomers, just please stay on the line, and to give us your new name, your name and newcomer, that would be great. And so now we will close with a reading from the big book on page 164. And Cindy D., will you please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only, and it says, and keep you until then. Thank you.
Thanks, Sherry. This is Cindy D., gratefully recovered in Texas. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.